Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. It's a great day in South Central Alaska. An even better day because we're talking about money today. I have a couple of guests here in the studio who are going to enlighten us from the Alaska Permanent Fund. Its Chief Investment Officer, Jeff Pantages, is here. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
And Dave Lauer, who I talked to several days ago and did a little arm twisting, and he was happy to be here. You work over at First National Bank, but you are the president of the Alaska Bankers Association.
Correct, on both counts.
And so we're going to talk money, and hopefully we'll get some people who are interested and would like to ask questions or make comments. Give us a call. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free is 1-888-353-5752. And our email, communityforum@kska.org. Don't forget, if you're listening in the evening, which my boss will be, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded. I wanted to, I had been listening to watching television, listening to the radio about all the financial discussion going on since Monday's big drop in the Dow and all of the work that's going on down in the House and U.S. Senate to try to deal with the financial situation that the U.S. finds itself in. Here in Alaska, though, Dave, how are we looking? People frequently say we lag behind, but can you kind of give us an idea of what our temperature is at this point?
Well, we're not, at least so far as banks are concerned, immediately affected by what happened or didn't happen over the weekend or Monday. Mm-hmm. Certainly, in terms of banks, there is no risk to depositors' money. So far as Alaska banks are concerned, mm-hmm. there is no no danger of failure of a bank here whatsoever. Banks here simply did not participate in any of the excesses that are coming to light insofar as mm-hmm. Larger institutions outside are concerned. And so from the standpoint of there being some sort of crisis or some reason for concern about deposits in jeopardy, that's not something that's at play in Alaska whatsoever.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And, Dave, in effect, it's also we know that there's deposit insurance covers $100,000 of any depositor at the bank. If you have a deposit at the bank, it's covered by $100,000 FDIC insurance. And, in fact, there's even a move – today to boost that up to $250,000. It's not the law yet, but that's part of a package that the Senate is now considering.
Which, as I understand it, both parties are looking pretty favorably upon that.
So. Well, I think so. I think, and it's a very responsible thing to do. I think if you, it's something that bankers, to some extent, have been calling for some time. Actually, if you consider inflation. If we started with the same insurance coverage and accounted for inflation, we'd be up to somewhere in the neighborhood of $280,000 worth of protection. Mm-hmm. So taking it to $250,000 simply brings it inflation adjusted to what maybe it should have been anyway.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of blame, a lot of finger pointing going on. Although many congressmen and senators are saying, well, let's not point the finger right now. Let's just try to solve whatever problem there is. And some people say maybe there is no problem. But there was a huge voter backlash this week to a proposal of taxpayers bailing out banks and financial institutions that were on the rocky road. And we've been hearing a lot of scary personal stories on the news, people losing chunks of their retirement fund. We've seen what we thought were venerable banks going belly up and major industries laying off workers. And even Europe, the financial community over there, has not been immune to this. How if we do have a leg, which is something that Lisa Murkowski said, I know, Dave, you were just talking about that a little bit ago, but I wanted to get back to that real quickly. If we do have a leg, how long could it be, and is that a good or bad thing?
A lag in? I'm sorry.
Lisa Murkowski, Senator Lisa Murkowski, was saying that whenever there is a major national issue, bad situation, Alaska generally is immune to it for some period of time. I know my mom said when the Great Depression hit, the only problems that they really had up here were, you know, a shortage of some materials like aluminum and stuff. Are we still in that, like, really remote stage where we can say, well, financially, we could still see a hit later on down the line?
Oh, I think so. When you think about it, our local economy is resource extraction based, and the consequence of that is that we're trading in commodities, and that's not apt to be affected. I mean, there'll be some impact on oil prices, probably, which will have an impact on the size of the state budget. But that's sort of marginal. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out there's going to be a decline in the economy nationally. Economic activity is going to be limited more or less, regardless of what happens today. Mm-hmm. Just as economic activity was limited when we had the dot-com crisis 5 years ago. And so you just have to reckon how a decline in the economy nationally or internationally might affect us. Jeff and I were talking, I mean, there's apt to be some, in terms of our economy, a portion of it is the tourist business. There's apt to be some impact
on travel,
on travel for pleasure. Just as an example, I'm Copper River salmon. You have to assume that there's not going to be as many people outside who are willing to pay or able to pay $25, $28 for a pound of Copper River salmon. That's going to have some marginal impact on the economy. But by and large, there will be continued activity in terms of natural resource exploration, production, and our citizens will have jobs, and there'll be the same service economy here to provide amenities for the people who have those jobs.
Jeff Pantage is from the Permanent Fund. Let's talk about that fund a little bit.
Let me just back up for a minute.
Okay,
because
sure.
I'm not with the Alaska Permanent Fund. Right. Alaska Permanent Capital Management. So we're an investment manager here in Anchorage. We have a couple $1 billion of assets under management. We do manage money, a bond portfolio for the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Yes.
But I'm not the chief investment officer for that fund.
Sorry.
But I could talk a little bit about it. I follow it like everyone else does, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that fund, as you know, is I think it was $40 billion a while ago, and now it's down to just under $34 billion. So it's certainly not immune from this disruptions and turmoil in the financial markets. And it has an asset allocation of about 70% equity stocks and about 30% bonds. It's well diversified across all the major asset classes here in the United States and abroad. But, you know, we've seen a pretty significant decline in the markets here. Certainly year to date, most of the equity markets, the stock markets here and abroad are down, you know, we'll cuff a number at around 20% or so. So we're seeing quite a big decline in those markets, and that affects our permanent fund. And ultimately, you know, it could affect the dividends as we go forward, although those are, you know, a five-year kind of averaging process. So any 1 year will not dramatically affect our dividend. But the financial markets, you know, we are immune a little bit up here in Alaska from the goings-on in the lower 48, but not completely. And certainly if the financial markets are weak, it affects the Alaska Permanent Fund, it affects our 401k plans, it affects our pension plans. And individuals certainly are involved in the stock market, and they see declines in those markets as well, and they don't feel as wealthy. And they maybe start saving a little more, stop spending as much. And while that may be good for one person to do that, if everyone does that, At the same time, that tends to exacerbate and weaken the overall economy even more. So we're in that boat.
What I've been hearing is that people need to, you know, just sit tight if their 401k or whatever is invested in the long term, and things should improve.
Exactly. I think you have to take it. What Jeff said about the permanent fund is absolutely correct. It's the same thing as far as people's retirement savings, 401ks are concerned. They have not, at this point in time, suffered a loss, just as they did not, since they started investing in the 401k plan, experience a gain. Until they have to sell something.
Yeah.
There's no return or no loss, if you will. And so the market value, current market value is affected, but unless you have the need to liquidate your 401k at this moment for purposes of paying expenses, you still haven't, in effect, suffered a loss.
Yeah.
It's an unrealized loss, but it still hurts.
It
feels bad when you open up your monthly statement and see the fact that, you know, the various funds have gone down. That can have an impact on people.
Oh, sure it can, particularly when you take into account that people fear the prospect of having to liquidate.
True, though, in terms of, you know, what do you do? How do you handle these kind of situations? Because they can be very emotional right now for people. And people are worried and they're wondering, you know, should I just bail out now? Should I just go to short-term treasury bills? And that, to some extent, has happened in the fixed income markets. I mean, right now, short-term treasury bills, you know, the safest investment out there, they yield about 0.5%. And last week, their yield was close to zero.
Wow.
People were just wanted to make sure they got their money back. They didn't care if they got any return on their money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, when it comes to the financial markets, I think the big story, I think we all look at the stock market. And we see the stock market goes and it goes in, it's up and down. And it's not particularly unusual to see the stock market doing what it's doing, or at least it's not unprecedented to see this kind of volatility in stocks. And we have seen stocks up 200 or 300 points a day here in the last several weeks. Obviously, on Monday, it was down 777 points, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was.
Mm-hmm.
The worst day ever. Now, not the worst percentage point, you know, in terms of percent loss ever. It was about 8%, and I think that was the 17th worst day. So the stock market has been volatile and weak. The real story, though, I think, is in the credit markets, in the market for bonds and loans, and loans that banks make among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to see and have seen now for several weeks kind of real gridlock in those markets. People are afraid, and not just individuals, institutional investors are very nervous, and they don't want to make loans. They want to hoard cash. And that's kind of how a problem on Wall Street can spill over into Main Street when, you know, you're not making those loans. People can't go out and buy cars. Mm-hmm. And maybe they can't go out and buy a home because the rates are a little bit high, but they just can't get the credit now. And so that's the real story, that it's not – and I don't think we see that on television. You know, we always see the Dow in the stock market, but this is a little bit unseen, this gridlock in the credit markets.
I've heard it mentioned, but I think it's going to really hit home in the next few weeks. You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. You just heard Jeff Pantages. He's Chief Investment Officer for Alaska Permanent Capital Management. And he is here with Dave Lauer, who is the president of the Alaska Bankers Association. We're talking about our current economy and what's been going on. What about some of the credit unions? Dave, do you have an idea? I know, you know, banks and credit unions haven't historically been pals, but here in Alaska, it seems like you said that our banks are doing okay, and there is no indication that anything is wrong. But as far as the credit unions, are they in pretty good shape here in the state, or are they even impacted?
I have to believe the same thing applies to the credit unions. I really don't follow their activities on a day-to-day basis, but I certainly am not aware of any event or any particular investment that puts the shares of credit union members at risk at this point in time.
On the tightening of credit that you were talking about, Jeff, Is this going to be across the board, like housing, buying a home, credit cards, buying a car, student loans?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, if we don't fix this problem, and I think that's what this bill in Congress is all about,
mm-hmm.
this so-called $700 billion bailout package. I don't like the word bailout. I think that was part of the problem was we've labeled it a bailout. It's sort of a bailout for Wall Street fat cats. Are you for it or against it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think most people say they're against that. But that's really I don't think what it is. I think what this is an effort on the part of Ben Bernanke, our chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, and Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, to try and unfreeze these bond markets, these credit markets, and get credit flowing in the economy and kind of boost confidence
mm-hmm.
of investors. So that's what that program is about. And far from being money that's, you know, thrown away or money that's going down a rat hole or anything, I don't think that's the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
What they're planning to do is to issue Treasury bonds and buy some of these unusual mortgage-backed securities that are trading at really distressed fire sale prices to try and boost confidence in those markets. And they're not going to spend 100 cents on the dollar for those securities. They'll be buying them at, oh, maybe 40 or 50 cents on the dollar and getting back 60 or 70 cents on the dollar. So it's not as if, you know, they're bailing out anyone. And in fact, you know, if you think about, you know, you mentioned some of these issues early in the program, Nellie, where, you know, you had some of the brokerage houses going out of business, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers.
Yeah.
Even the big mortgage giants, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, of course, were really nationalized, let's call it that, by Washington. But, you know, shareholders have gotten nothing. When those things failed, the shareholders got virtually nothing in all of those cases. So shareholders are not being bailed out in terms of these other issues that have come before us. So
mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of the people are out against or seem to be not in favor of the legislation that's before Congress. I think that's a mistake. I think it really is a good idea. It's what policymakers should be thinking about doing. And, you know, we're not in the Great Depression. I mean, and we're not going to get into the Great Depression. I think we're a long ways from that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a period of, what, 25% unemployment rates?
That was a whole, different time,
yeah.
too. I mean, the economy is advanced.
That's not where we are. But passage of bills like this and having government intervention at times like this, well, I'm not crazy about it because I'm conservative. I'm kind of a conservative person, and I don't really go for this. But I think in this case, you just have to hold your nose and do it because I think it really helps the economy in the long run, and it helps us avoid, what could be a deep recession at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the immediate problem here is not loss of credit to the consumer. It certainly affects consumer sentiment. But when you're talking about these credit markets, you're talking about credit to businesses, those businesses that employ people.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, these people operate on short-term credit. If they can't get short-term credit, they're out of business. Life is that easy. And then you have the multiplier effect of loss of jobs and loss of demand for goods and services that these people deliver. So that's the real risk.
Right. And I think, you know, now we're seeing it more on the business side, major companies having a tougher time getting financing. But it's really only a matter of time till that spills over to the consumer and where
mm-hmm.
you do see it more difficult to get an auto loan and more difficult to get a credit card or have your credit balance, you know, lowered, your ability to get credit lowered. So I think that's kind of where we are. I mean, we're not there yet. I mean, the economy is actually not in recession officially yet. It's
mm-hmm.
it's sluggish. It's bumping along. But so far, we're kind of okay, but we're tipping there where things could get a little bit ugly unless we start to pass something like this program, for example, which
I'd like to talk about a little more. People today were saying, well, you know, things are looking a lot more stable today, and maybe we don't really need the taxpayer assistance. But on the other hand, people like you, Jeff, and I think probably Dave would agree, maybe if we don't get a grip and do it, are we looking at even harder times ahead?
Oh, I think definitely so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as
are we in denial?
It's not a matter of denial. It's that we don't perceive the immediate effect. I mean, I don't know that that everybody has the appreciation for exactly how much a big business depends upon credit in order just to operate. And so it's not seen at this point in time how big a change has really come to bear as a consequence of what's transpired.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, Jeff, do you have any indication of how soon we need to do this? Like, does this need to happen, or can we even know how soon it needs to happen? Like, this week? Can it happen next week? I've heard there's urgency, and some people say there's no urgency. What is it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if it, you know, has to happen this week or next week, but it has to, I think, should happen pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could tell you that the credit markets are pretty gridlocked, and it's hard to get loans, and companies are struggling. So the sooner it happens, the better. That's my view.
You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking about our economy. My guest today in the studio, Dave Lauer, who is president of the Alaska Bankers Association, and Jeff Pantage is chief investment officer with Alaska Permanent Capital Management. And this is a live call-in program. If you're listening in the afternoon, if you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded. We're going to go to the phone lines now. And Steve on line six, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'd like to say, first off, I'm not an economist, but I am a business owner. And my take on this is that this is probably the biggest transfer of wealth from the public sector to the private sector that has ever occurred in the history of man. It needs to be stopped dead in the water. Frankly, I'll tell you right now, I'd rather take the hit in my 401k than have my children and grandchildren paying for this for the next 50 years. And this is a black hole that we're looking into here, folks. The $700 billion is the amount they're willing to have on the books at one time. But the way I understand it, the total amount of this devastation could be up to $5 trillion that needs to be written off. And basically, they're just going to pump the money through there and buy out these assets and bail out their buddies on Wall Street and the bankers. And if this country has to go back to operating on a cash economy and to a gold standard, I think that would be the best thing that could happen to this country from the standpoint of stability and for the benefit of the people of this country.
Mm-hmm. But you would be for taking action to save what we have so far by passage of a bill that would...
No passage, no bailout, no help for these idiots who made bad decisions.
Oh.
Let them take the hit.
Okay, thank
you. Let them take the loss and save my children from this devastation that will be carried on for the next several generations. Let it ring out of the system now. Bite the bullet. Let these people take the hit. This was all created by the Community Reinvestment Act and the fact that the Clinton administration forced the banks to give bad loans to bad people.
Okay, Steve, I wanted to try to catch up on some of what you said. I kind of he is, I think, maybe pretty typical of some of the people that I've been hearing saying these guys are, you know, the ones that if we're late on our payments for a couple of weeks, we're getting phone calls and, you know, the heck with them. What do you think, Jeff?
He sounds like Andrew Mellon. Andrew Mellon was Hoover's Secretary of the Treasury, and he famously said on the eve of the Great Depression, liquidate labor, liquidate business, liquidate the farmers, purge the rottenness out of the system. I mean, I think that's a very ideological point of view, and I think you have to be pragmatic right now. That's what I'm kind of encouraging people to think about, you know, trying to be pragmatic, because I don't like bailouts either.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think many people do. I don't think of this as a bailout. I think of it as an economic stabilization program. I don't believe that banks will get bailed out from this. What banks are going to do is they're going to be able to sell their securities in the marketplace to this deep pockets investor called the federal government, who's going to buy them up at maybe 40 or 50 cents in the dollar. They're not buying them at 100 cents in the dollars. The banks are going to take a hit. The problem right now, Nellie, though, is if mortgage-backed securities are really not trading much in the market, and they're trading at fire sale prices, at distressed prices. And because of the accounting we now have, some of the banks have to mark their securities to market. meaning wherever they trade in the market, they've got to mark them down on their books to that level, even though they're going to hold them to maturity. But they have to mark them down. So they have to mark them down to maybe 25 cents on the dollar, and that makes the banks look bad. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really an accounting issue. First of all, we could change the accounting. That would help, and there's moves to do that. All right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, if the government could come in and bid up the prices of those securities, they won't trade at 25 cents. They'll trade much closer to sort of intrinsic or fundamental value, which is 40 or 50 cents on the dollar. That's kind of what we need.
I would prefer we not refer to this as a bailout of banks. There are few, if any, banks who are in jeopardy by reason of the fact of their investment in these sorts of securities. We're talking about what have come to be called investment bankers,
mm-hmm.
which is a far different animal.
Yeah.
These are people who are in the business of raising money for others. Not in providing their own capital and making use of deposits of others.
Mm-hmm. Weren't they called shadow bankers or something like that? The ones that were just in it for raising.
I must say I've never heard that term before. But once again, to take Jeff's point, bailout would be strict, if you will. Just giving them money.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what's happening here.
Yeah.
The securities the government is acquiring are not valueless.
Mm-hmm.
It's yet to be determined how valuable they are, but there is potentially the opportunity for a complete return of investment.
Okay. On the internet, a question from Bill from Eagle River. If the government increases the FDIC savings insurance from $100,000 to $250,000, will the NCUA automatically be increased the same amount? And is there any place on the internet that people can go to look at the strength or weakness of Alaska credit unions and banks? Good question. So what about that NCUA? I forgot what the acronym stands for, but Dave?
National Credit Union
Administration.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So can either of you answer that?
No. As a matter of fact, that's a very good question. I was thinking the same thing this morning. There is a counterpart to FDIC insofar as credit unions are concerned, but there has been absolutely no mention of what
happens with the credit.
What's going to happen as far as the rules that pertain to them is concerned.
So his other question then, how does he find out how strong a bank is before he puts his money in it? Is there somewhere you can go and there's like a Consumer Reports of banks or something?
Yes, probably if you look up on the website of any bank,
mm-hmm.
There is a statement of financial condition which will demonstrate what they have in the way of assets in excess of liabilities for purposes of paying depositors.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the larger banks have ratings. Moody's, Standard & Poor's, Fitch are rating agencies that mm-hmm. assign a credit rating to banks. AAA is the highest rating you can get, and most banks are certainly in the A-rated category. But that's one way you can check on the strength of your bank is their credit rating, and that should be on their website, or it's pretty much publicly available.
Mm-hmm. In any event, with the insurance now, as far as deposits are concerned, it's $100,000 mm-hmm. of insurance. Perhaps it'll be $250,000 after tomorrow, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no possibility of loss there.
If there were. If a bank were here in Alaska were to have trouble and just for the sake of discussion go belly up, how long does it take to get your money if it's insured under the FDIC? Is there
Well, it's not a matter of getting your money back. We encountered this in the 80s when we had our last truly severe economic downturn when we lost there were at least 15 financial institutions that were closed in the period 1985-1986 in Alaska. Generally speaking, what happens is that in anticipation of the closing, the FDIC will step in. At that point in time, it was the Resolution Trust Corporation, and they will arrange for another bank to assume the liability for the deposits of the institution that will be closed, and that whoever is assuming the liability will also acquire the assets, the loans of that institution. And so essentially what happens, what certainly would happen then and what I would anticipate would happen now, is today you'd have an account with X Bank, and tomorrow X Bank would be closed, and your account would now be with Y Bank.
Gotcha. That certainly reminds me, in Kotzebue, where I was living at the time, and First National Bank of the North went belly up. It was closed for a few days. People in the community were very concerned because it was the only bank. But a few days later, it reopened as National Bank of Alaska, and everybody's accounts that had been in the other bank were there in the new bank, and it was actually a pretty smooth transition. And so I guess that's what you're referring to.
Exactly.
Sort of like someone buying out your home mortgage, and all of a sudden you're paying someone else, or your credit card gets bought out, and you're paying someone else.
I mean, as you know, I think we've had actually 13 problems with banks this year. I think 13 bank failures, but all the depositors have been made whole, to the best of my knowledge, in this country. So we talk about banks a lot, but at least at this point, we've had few bank failures, and usually what happens is, in the case of WaMu, for example, Washington Mutual, J.P. Mm-hmm. Morgan came in and has taken over that bank and is responsible for the deposits. In the case of Wachovia, Citigroup has came in and taken mm-hmm. over responsibility for those deposits. So usually the FDIC finds a way.
Let me re-emphasize, that's 13 banks nationally, elsewhere than Alaska.
Not here.
And that there is no evidence presently of the risk of that happening in respect of any bank in the state of Alaska.
That's good news. You're listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today I'm stumbling my way through economics with two high-powered guys here. Dave Lauer from First National Bank is the president of the Alaska Bankers Association, and Jeff Pantages, who is the chief investment officer for Alaska Permanent Capital Management here in Anchorage. We're going to go to the phones now. If you want to join in, if you have questions, give us a call, 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or toll-free 1-888-353-5752, or email communityforum@kska.org. Bert on line 7, welcome to the show.
Yes, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I've got to really concur with that last caller you had about the gold and silver. I'm wondering if these people, have any constitutional experience at all about, how a constitution works. Also, I'm curious for either one of them to answer the question about Basel II, if here October 1st, the rest of the world on September 1st conformed to Basel II, and now here it is October 1st. I'm wondering if the banks in Alaska have, or the banks in the United States for that matter, have conformed to this Basel II, which is briefly stating a transparency clause that would save us from this Enron-like bailout that these two men are proposing right now. And if the Congress would have accepted their National Economic Stabilization and Recovery Act as it was so written, and now they're trying to come up with this other so-called Recovery Act, I'm just curious. We wouldn't be in this position. I'm wondering if either one of these gentlemen had read the initial bill that Paulson put out for this bailout, because in the initial bill, it doesn't sound anything like what these two gentlemen are talking about.
Well, I can't say – this is Dave Lauer. I can't say that I read the bill. I did read summaries that were provided by the American Bankers Association having to do with its provisions.
How about Basel II?
Well, how about Basel II? Basel II will be adopted – In part by banks. Certain accounting rules is what he's talking about. It has some application today. It largely depends, insofar as corporate governance goes, as it affects banks, depending upon size. I mean, there are smaller banks who are not subject to some of those rules.
Right, and these rules, aren't these rules the ones that you're talking about, that this bailout is going to be affecting, supporting this Enronization of the American taxpayer?
I think insofar as Basel II would have application, it might in connection with the mark-to-market rule that Jeff mentioned before, but otherwise I don't see how Basel II would be involved in respect of the proposed legislation that's before the Senate today.
Okay, we're going to go on now to Tom on line 3. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I got a couple questions. One for the permanent fund, how about hedging with gold, which you described at the beginning of the program was a total paper investment. And the other issue is with respect to the bailout. There seems to be no effort to really stop the problem of over-leveraging real estate.
Uh-oh. Dave, you want to take a... What about the gold thing? You know, people are saying maybe we need to go back and get rid of all the money in the account and buy gold.
Well, I think that would, to some degree, limit the prospect of increased economic prosperity that we've enjoyed over the last 70 years since
always,
we've gone off the gold standard.
Yeah, I mean, I always struggle with gold as an investment because, it doesn't throw off any cash flow. If you own it, you have to – there's storage costs associated with it. I do agree that in a safe haven, in a crisis, gold seems to go up. So, you know, I can understand some people wanting to kind of hold some gold as sort of an insurance company, you know, when something really, really awful happens. It does seem to do better in those environments, but it doesn't have any real, to me, intrinsic value. So I've never been, frankly, a big fan of gold. I guess I just rather own U.S. Treasury bills or U.S. Treasury bonds as part of a portfolio, as sort of my safe haven asset. Now, I think Tom also mentioned something about sort of over-leveraging in mortgages and real estate. And I, you know, he certainly hit on something. I think, you know, first of all, when we say leverage, we really mean taking on debt. People use that phrase leverage, but we really mean taking on debt. And we took on a lot of debt over the last several years at the consumer level and the
national
level. And that's partly one of the reasons why we're probably going to, you know, see a somewhat sluggish economy for several more years, because we've got to pay off that debt. We've got to save more, and that means consume less.
Mm-hmm.
And so generally it seems likely that the economy will, you know, not be as strong as it was in the past. It's likely to slow down a little bit because of that, because we're going to have to reduce the leverage that we have out there.
And on top of that, the huge national debt, Dave, I can imagine bankers not being too happy about that. Is this something that you watch periodically, or does it really make a difference?
Oh, of course, it makes an enormous difference. It has an impact on inflation. It has an impact on the value of the dollar against other currencies. Yes, it has a dramatic impact on what happens in the economy.
Okay, let's get back to the phones real quick here and get some of our listener questions answered. Julie on line 5, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have two unrelated questions. The first one is local, and the second one is having to do with the national crisis. The local one is for the gentleman from the Bankers Association, and that is that I have, I'm an attorney, but I'm not a banking attorney, so I know nothing about banking. But I've been trying to help an elderly relative who has learned, and I have learned from talking to the 800 number for Wells Fargo Bank, that a number of senior citizens have had their escrow requirements more than doubled. In other words, they're not subprime borrowers. They have 30-year mortgages, and they've been paying on them for 20 years or so, and yet they have recently suddenly been informed that their escrow requirements are going to be more than doubled. And when I tried to find out information about it, I was told that, well, that the banks, because of needing to feel more secure or needing to increase the amount of security in the escrow account, they were raising them. And I just wondered from the Bankers Association gentleman, if he had heard of such a phenomenon as good borrowers, holders of mortgages, having their escrow requirements raised in order for the banks to feel more secure.
Okay, let's try to get that answered, and then we'll get to your second question.
Okay, that's not something that I'm aware is happening locally as a consequence of decisions made by local banks. Virtually all the mortgage loans made in the state of Alaska are sold to investors in the secondary market, whether that's Alaska Housing, Fannie Mae, Freddie that we've been talking about. And they're the ones who specify what sort of conditions for continuation of the extension of credit are available. So it is possible that in respect of some types of mortgages and that are owned by some of those secondary market financiers, to feel more secure, they may be requiring increased escrow deposit. I'm not aware of it, though. It's certainly nothing that I've heard anything about in connection with First National's mortgage activity.
Jeff Pantages, have you heard anything about that?
I haven't.
Okay.
No.
Sorry there, Julie. We'll have to go on to your second question.
Okay. I only brought it up because it seemed alarming and counterproductive.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see that come in the mail.
Well, it amounted, in some cases that I've looked at, it amounts to an increase in the mortgage cost each month of 12%. And to get a 30-day notice that, by the way, the cost of living in your home that you've lived in for 20 years is going to be now raised 12% so that we, the bank, can feel secure even though you, the homeowner, have done nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm. Once again, not the bank.
Okay. But they're getting the notice.
Well, yes, because the bank is servicing the mortgage. It's doing nothing but performing a service of collecting payments from the borrower and providing record keeping services and remittance services to whoever is invested in the mortgage.
Right. I only threw that out there so that listeners would realize that even though the banks cannot raise the amount of principal and interest payments, evidently they've got free rein to go ahead and raise the escrow requirements. But anyway, to the national issue, I was wondering what the gentleman from the PFD thought about the fact that Congress, in its initial consideration of the so-called bailout package, at some point during their deliberations, it was proposed that along with everything else being proposed, that the bankruptcy law be amended to provide protection for homeowners. I'm not talking about subprime homeowners. I'm talking about ordinary homeowners, to provide protection so that in bankruptcy, everyone's home in which they're living, their primary residence, would be protected from unsecured creditors. And, of course, that proposal was opposed by the Republicans. And I wanted to find out what he thought about that proposal. And my interest in this simply has to do with the fact that since for ordinary, not subprime homeowners, any one of whom could be struck by a serious illness, have major medical bills, or have a job loss of one of the spouses, bankruptcy is a serious prospect for a great many people, mm-hmm. even middle-class people. Mm-hmm. And in most states, the home value is not protected. And in Alaska, all that is protected is $68,000 of your home equity.
Okay.
So if you have to file bankruptcy. So I just wanted to know the gentleman's thought on that specific provision.
Okay, Jeff, do you know anything about that? I did hear on the news the other day that they were talking about changing the bankruptcy laws to add some protections for people who couldn't make their home.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that specific thing that Julie's saying. I did think they were trying to get provisions in there that would let bankruptcy judges just generally change the terms of the mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me a little uncomfortable.
Precisely.
Sort of as an investor, you want to know that, you know, you have certain rights and to you when you mm-hmm. make an investment. And if a judge can come in and just change the terms of these mortgages, and suddenly now as an investor you thought you were going to get, what, 7%, and the judge comes in and says, no, I think that homeowner can only afford 5 or 4%. Well, we're going to change the mortgage loan. I think you're going down a real slippery path there where...
I'm really, really scared. Now, who are these investors, Dave? Are they
the
stock market people?
No, the principal investor here in the state of Alaska in terms of home mortgages is Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Mm-hmm. That's right now where most of the mortgage credit is coming from. Insofar as changes in the bankruptcy law are concerned, I warrant to you, as Jeff said, that if you increase risk by way of allowing bankruptcy judges to affect established credit contracts. Yes, maybe it will in some instances help people with mortgages now, but I guarantee in the future it will limit the amount of mortgage credit that's available,
mm-hmm.
and it will increase the cost of mortgage credit for everybody who gets a loan after that change is made.
I know there's a lot of ideas floating around out there. I noticed as the day progressed, I heard several different things on the news that they were proposing, trying to pacify different groups. So nothing official is out yet as far as I know today even. Off the internet from Jeff, why is it that we have world leaders and national leaders begging our senators and congressmen to pass this legislation, and yet the majority, I am guessing, of the U.S. population is so opposed to this piece of legislation? It seems that either the leaders know something that the public doesn't know or understand, or the public is just finally demanding accountability at all costs. Jeff, I'm going to hand you off to Jeff Pantages. What do you think about his question there? Apparently, according to Don Young and others, they're getting flooded with...
And certainly I think that was true over the weekend on Monday. And then when the stock market went down and did what it did, I think the calls changed a little bit, and the odds are changing a little bit in terms of the public's perception. When you see that kind of sort of carnage in the financial markets, I think that's got people's attention, and they sort of realize that maybe this is going to affect their own investment portfolios. People have started to think twice about those feelings. But I think there is a view that, you know, again, we've characterized this as a bailout.
Mm-hmm.
And just using that word sounds like that's not a good idea. And by the way, $700 billion is a lot of money. I mean, we need to pay attention to this. It is not bad that we're wrestling with this and arguing about it, because the fact of the matter is that this was proposed initially as a three-pager.
Mm-hmm.
We need to flush it out a little more.
And as I understand it, I think some of the numbers that were being floated around, Dave, were $7,000 per taxpayer is what it would cost them approximately to bail out, to help at $700 million.
Well, if there was no return on any of these assets that the government is supposed to be buying, I suppose ultimately you could look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, I think Jeff is right. This is not necessarily a bailout. Why is public sentiment against it? Well, I can tell you philosophically, I'm against it. There should be accountability in the system. And I'm not happy from the standpoint of a taxpayer. I'm not happy from the standpoint of a banker,
mm-hmm.
who has acted prudently, conservatively, not made any of these bad investments, not made any of these bad loans, if you will. And now I get the opportunity, not only as a taxpayer, to participate, but also
as a banker,
I wind up with at a minimum higher requirements as far as fees go for deposit insurance. So we've got to pay the paper.
Everything's going up. Okay, let's move on back to the phones now and try to get caught up here. Sarah on line 4, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello everybody. You know, this seems to me to be some type of hybrid between a Ponzi scheme and a pyramid scheme. All that $700 billion is going to go to is shoring up paper that people have passed around and transferred and sold to each other. I mean, if you look at it in the sense that somebody bought a house and somebody took that loan and sold it to somebody else, and then insurers got involved and started insuring that loan would be good, and then we passed the paper off on Europeans who trusted us because we're America, and big-name banks were involved. I mean, it all boils down to one house. And all we're doing is shoring up something that shouldn't never have been built. So, you know, I know this is going to happen because, you know, there's big money involved and there's big people involved and there's big egos and there's no way to stop this.
Okay, let me try to get some answers for you because we're running out of time.
There's a Ponzi scheme here.
Hang on. Jeff Pantages, what about that Ponzi scheme business?
Yeah, well, I think – I don't know about Ponzi schemes or pyramid schemes, but I think, you know, the idea that the loans were passed on is an interesting thought, and I think that's – there's some merit to just talking a little bit about that because, you know, how did we get into this mess in the first place? How did this happen? Well, I think there's a couple reasons. One, you really have to go back to the early – to 2001. We had a stock market bubble that had burst. We had 9/11, and what happened was we were in recession. And the Federal Reserve pushed interest rates down and kept them down quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that encouraged a lot of home building. That encouraged a lot of refinancing of loans. That encouraged people that maybe couldn't afford to get into a house to get into a house. At the same time, we had a somewhat of a national policy that said home ownership is good. And so we had the big mortgage giants, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, making loans to individuals that maybe couldn't afford them.
But, so, I understand what you're saying there. But to me, it seems like, I mean, the final approval comes from the financial institution. I mean, if somebody applies for a loan, the approval comes from the bank.
Well, sure it does. But now you're talking about the securities that's causing the liquidity crisis. They are not valueless. In order for them to be valueless, every mortgage that secures payment of those securities would have to go unpaid. That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about here is the ability to turn those securities into cash now so as to have cash to be able to operate now.
But Nelly,
yes,
I think you're assuming that you're saying that the bank should have underwritten these securities better. They should have done a better job and been more careful. They should have. I'm going to say, yeah, absolutely, they should have. But part of the issue was the banks didn't eat their own cooking. They didn't have skinny in the game because mm-hmm. a lot of the banks or mortgage bankers, people who are making loans, just made the loan and then they passed them off to Wall Street who packaged them. And then Wall Street sent them on somewhere else. So this was – in the old days, we had a model that was called originate to hold.
Mm-hmm.
You ate your own cooking. You were responsible for that loan. It's on your balance sheet.
Yep.
The new Wall Street alchemy was originate to distribute. And the underwriting got very sloppy.
Mm-hmm.
And they packaged these securities and sent them on, and they weren't on my balance sheet. What mm-hmm. do I care? Mm-hmm. But I get a fee.
Yep.
So that aspect of this crisis has been talked about a little bit, and we're unlikely to see that. You know, again, there'll be some rules and regulations, and thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
I mean, we need more right now, more rules and regulations.
It's sort of shocking that you're saying that because, you know, it seemed like everybody fought so hard for deregulation, and now people – and if you could talk about that a little bit, Dave – are we going to have to go back to more regulation? I mean, people are saying deregulation, let the market work.
Well, first of all, there is no doubt that there will be more and more intense regulation in respect of all segments of the financial services industry. That's simply going to be – that's simply how our Congress operates.
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes whether that regulation – will prevent the next event, and the answer is no, because the same people who found ways to get around what was limiting their activities this mm-hmm. time are still just as clever as they were before, and they'll find ways to get around.
Do you agree with that, Jeff?
I don't, actually. I do think that we will see some new regulation, and I think it will make it more difficult for people to leverage their balance sheets. And again, basically that means issue a lot of debt. I think we're going to see a world where we see less debt and more equity on these companies' balance sheets. I think that's a world of a more stable world. But it also is somewhat discourages innovation and risk-taking, so maybe that means we won't grow quite as fast as we have in the past in terms mm-hmm. of economic growth, but it'll be more stable.
It seems
so that's kind of what yeah. I I see coming out of this, because the financial landscape has been radically changed.
Yes.
We started this year with five independent brokerage firms: Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs. Two of those firms have basically declared bankruptcy. One was acquired by a bank, and the other two have become banks. So the whole Wall Street of the landscape of Wall Street has changed, mm-hmm. and there's going to be much more leverage out there and much less risk taking. Again, more stability, I think, but maybe not quite as much growth and maybe not quite as much innovation as we've seen in the past.
Will banks hold still for this, Dave? Are they? You know, it seems to me like, you know, if you're making money and you know you're operating out there in the free market, you don't want, you know, more regulation. Are they going to fight it? Do you think banks will be fighting it? Or are they going to be a little more welcoming of more regulation?
No, I don't think they're going to be more welcoming of regulation. The regulation as far as banks per se is concerned is there now,
mm-hmm.
to avoid irresponsible lending, if you will. We're talking now rather about what we call investment banks.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to have any choice but to stand for it. I mean, after this, the constituents of every legislature are going to be demanding more regulation and enforcement for that regulation.
Yeah. And just to let you know, Kristen, I probably won't get to any more callers. We're running out of time here. But I just wanted to say, it just seems really weird, Dave and Jeff, that in this whole occurrence, event, whatever you want to call it, people in Alaska are out there spending money like there's no tomorrow, because the permanent fund checks just went out, and the $1,200 for to help with fuel. Is this blinded us to what's going on in the outside world, or is this going to give us a better winter, more stability? Any thoughts on that, Jeff?
Well, I think it is a steady source of income for many Alaskans, and the U.S. economy can go up or down, and the financial markets go up or down, but generally, we're going to get our dividends. So that adds stability to our economy, and it's a great help to our economy. Hey, my advice though is save a lot of it if you can. Save mm-hmm. it for a rainy day right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are thinking more along those lines.
Well, it is a good thing. I mean, the favorable economy we've enjoyed nationally, and as a matter of fact, in Alaska for 18 straight years now, yeah. improvements in the economy are largely a function of consumer spending.
And okay, well, I'm sorry, but we're about out of time. I want to thank you for being here, Dave, from the Alaska Bankers Association. Dave Lauer, thank you very much. And Jeff Pantages from Alaska Permanent Capital Management, thank you also. And I'm going to have to go back and find one of those books on economics and read it again. Thanks for being here. Next week, we'll be here with Mr. Fackrell, the president of Denali Pipeline Company. So join me for Community Forum then. I'll see you next week.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.